Welcome to the Shack 15 Conversations podcast, where we invite founders, innovators, and changemakers to share ideas with the community, speak to the experience of building their businesses, and unlock some of the hard-earned wisdom collected along the way.
Today, over 100 billion garments are produced annually for less than 8 billion people worldwide, a massive overproduction that places fashion in critical opposition with the planet's natural capacity to support life on Earth. On December 5th, Shack 15 hosted Remake founder and CEO Aisha Barenblatt and a special guest, the labor activist Kalpana Akhtar, founder and executive director of the Bangladesh Center for Workers' Solidarity, who is known globally for her engagement with various international organizations, including United Nations agencies, to bring greater respect to garment workers in Bangladesh. She is now one of the most high-profile union organizers in the global garment industry. Together, Aisha and Kalpana brought attention to the injustices within the fashion industry, centered the voices of garment workers, and shared ways that you can advocate for a more ethical, sustainable future of fashion. The conversation was introduced by Shack 15 member and founder and CEO of Donna Incorporated, Chamini Donna. Here is Kalpana Akhtar.
Our behavior, especially up-and-coming designers, but also customers entering the market, directly have impacts when it comes to the supply chain. When you want things very cheap, when you want things very fast, what that means is that workers sitting on the factory floor suddenly have the flashing red output signs in a supply chain to say, work faster. And the gender-based violence goes up. So that's something I think, Kalpana, that's often not talked in these spaces. You know, in my career, we often hear of child labor, we hear of sweatshops, but what we don't talk about is how this is a gendered issue. And the idea that it's not just that this is one of the only manufacturing industries that is a predominantly female workshop, but all the managers and up are men. And, you know, I cannot tell you how many communities I've been in where workers talk about being verbally harassed, being sexually harassed, being physically harassed. And we know that in COVID that those numbers really went up. So I was wondering, knowing that you are now a renowned labor organizer, a unionist, you work with workers day in, day out, if you could give people some examples of what it looks like when it comes to gender-based violence. That's such a complicated term. In terms of, on a very human level, when we buy things very cheap and fast, what does that look like in the workplace?
Yeah, I mean, if you meet any women workers, like, and her shift, she can barely talk to you. You can smell like sweat that is like, you know, very bad smell from coming from her body. Because she was in excessive production, you know, work, she can make only maybe, she can hit the production 100 pieces in an hour, but she had been forced to do 140. So she couldn't, you know, drink enough water. And the lights fan is not enough in the factory majority of the time. If you know that heat is increasing in every places in the world, so do in my country. So when temperature is like 30 degree in outside in the factory, it plus like another 10 or more. So workers getting more sweat and there is, you know, nothing just help them. So end of the work shift, these women's, you know, always tells us that I don't have any energy left with me that I can talk to anyone. My body ache and my spine getting in pain. I cannot see, you know, I mean, her eyesight is not focused. So this is all, you know, she faced, you know, after her long shift. And it's because of the fast fashion that famously we talk about. That is, you know, tolling our workers' life. Not only, you know, ruining our ecological system, ruining our workers, you know, life of span of their work as well. And, you know, Aisha just told that, you know, how that ruining like other part of the world in the same time. So it's a big question that do we really need that many clothes? Yeah. And also when we talk about gender-based violence, Aisha, you know, thanks for raising these. You know, our part of the world or, you know, In Global South, women also been taught culturally that not to talk about it. If you speak up, women, it is your problem. if you talk about your clothes, you know, the clothes you had wear, it wasn't appropriate, or you did something, or you will lose your job, or, you know, what society will tell. So when we have been raised up, we have been told not to talk about it. So it's a cultural taboo there. But gladly, you know, I was able to speak. I had a powerhouse, my mom, who taught me that if there is injustice, someone always can stand up and speak out. And if it is someone, then why not you? So I spoke up. And, you know, I'm glad that I represent the organization where there is a space we created for women workers to come and break that silence. So we are breaking that silence. And I think, you know, very minimum we could do till now, but we have a long way to go to, you know, defeat the gender-based violence at the workplace.
Thank you, Kalpona. And I think I brought a little prop to make this very real for you all. How many of you have seen these sort of slogan tees? Is the future is female, show of hands. Lots of people. So I was gifted this, and of course, being who I am and having spent most of my time in supply chains, I had to look at the label. And you know, this is an Amazon private label t-shirt that's made in China. And this morning on our community call, we were talking about the genocide that's happening in the Uyghur region in China, where the Uyghur people are being erased of their lives and their culture and their dignity to make t-shirts like this. And so a lot of our work is sort of to get past the performative slogan tee activism to say the future is female, women's rights are human rights. I'm amazed by how many of these slogans are made in places where women don't even have the basic dignities that Kalpona is talking about. I think, and we really want to open it up to questions shortly. The other thing to really connect to this question of, okay, this is dehumanizing work, even though this is high-skilled work. I tell you, sit in a kind of conditions as Kalpona has described, try and put a cuff on, a sleeve on. This is high-skilled work that we have somehow decided as men in power that a $2.5 trillion industry is going to keep upwards of 90% of fashion supply chain in poverty wages, and that the conditions are so obscene in 2022. But then there's a connection also to the climate crisis, right? We talked earlier about we're making 100 billion units of clothes. We're making them very cheaply. It's only in our lifetime that clothing has become disposable. But Kalpona and I have a lot to say about this because we are from Bangladesh and Pakistan, which is really seeing the front lines of a lot of what this work means. So, you know, you may have companies saying, I'm thinking about energy efficiency and sustainable design and all these cool ways that carbon offsetting. Talk to me about why carbon offsetting drives you crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I was telling, you know, Aisha earlier that, you know, when people talk, so in COP, you know, when a huge people gather together, they talks about a lot of things. And when they talks about green economy, carbon-free economy, that makes me sick. Yeah, I mean, because they don't talk about workers. Where is the worker? Where there is stake? Where is the living wage for them? So when you don't include these workers' voice on it, workers' stake on it, living wage on it, then you will be never, ever have the green economy. In Bangladesh or many countries, we have, they call green factory. It's like a certification. Yeah. I mean, putting like green thing in your factory or like, you know, environmental friendly doesn't mean it's a green factory when workers are tolling their life in the building and try their best to get out from the poverty, but how hard they can, they're never able to get out because there is no adequate minimum wage for themselves. The factories are not safe. The factories are with gender-based violence. And they don't have union voice up there. So that building might be green, but that factory is not a green factory for me. So whenever these, you know, climate justice talks happen, the workers need to be included and living wage need to be included.
Thank you so much for that, Kalpona. You know, I can't tell you how maddening it is to be having these climate conversations with other people on the front lines of climate shock. So to make it very concrete for you, a third of my home country has been underwater. I'm from Pakistan. The cotton crop has been destroyed. The apparel industry has a long history of both buying cotton and producing from Pakistan. Other than H&M writing a $250,000 check, which is really nothing for H&M, there wasn't the one fashion brand who did anything other than ask for retroactive discounts from the factory because the product wasn't going to move fast enough. And so as the crescendo, for so many of you raised your hands to say the climate crisis is an existential crisis, we have to have a justice lens to this. What does a just transition look like for these 70 million workers, generations of women who have kept this industry profitable? How do we get them to living wages as quickly as possible? When we exit from industries, whether war or conflict or climate shocks, how do we make sure that she is whole? In the pandemic, during climate shocks in Sri Lanka and Pakistan and Bangladesh, what we've seen is the industry just demanding airship the goods. If you can't airship the goods, we're not going to pay you. And guess what? Because the industry operates on debt, if you don't pay the factories, the workers don't get paid. So Kalpona, I know this is a wonderful audience. I want to open it up for questions, but I think we've really depressed people. But you and I have one thing in common, which is we're eternal optimists. So let's talk for a second about solutions. We talked about education, right? But not the sort of bullshit corporate education on sustainability, more about worker rights. How is it that we can really build an organizing movement around this industry? I'm curious from your perspective, if you were to pick two solutions that you think really work after 30 plus year of doing this work, you were very young, you still look great. What would you say those two solutions are?
One is, you know, we need to get out from all the MSIs.
People who don't know what the jargon alphabet soup
is. Multi-stakeholder initiatives, which is like voluntary scheme, never helped workers to, you know, have a better life or better workplace or safe workplace. So we need more binding agreements, like Accord on Bangladesh Fire and Building Safety, which is like international accord now, to make a real difference in the production countries like Bangladesh, like Pakistan, and elsewhere where we are having this production. This is one. So we need more and more binding agreement along with a mandatory human rights due diligence to make this corporation accountable that should be coming from the sourcing country government. So the brands cannot threat us when, you know, our wages are being increased or our production floors are better, that they will be moved their production somewhere else because that law will be follow them elsewhere they go. So this is one. And second is, you know, I know that, you know, the people, those are in room, they are, you guys are consumers too, and you are more sensitive, you know, more accountable or more sensible consumers. So every time I speak anywhere, the one dilemma come to the consumers, should I buy or I shouldn't buy? Yeah. I mean, very bold, clear message, please buy. Not buying is not the solution. We're in a civilized world. We cannot be nude. We need to have, get the clothes.
Could be nude if they want to, but, you know, no judgment.
Yeah. So that depends on that how I define that, how many clothes I need. But if you don't buy, that would be a boycott, and boycott would be like more worse for workers in the production country like us. But when you buy clothes, speak up. I mean, go beyond the size, color, style, and price tag. Start ask more questions to the store managers or to the company, whomever you know. If you start asking the store managers, that will be ringing bell to the, you know, bosses' offices that, you know, the consumers are not buying only the clothes. They are coming with the question that they wanted to know about these women who made these clothes for them. Have these, you know, they have been paid living wage? Is this factory safe? Is this factory gender-based violence free? And do these workers have a union voice at workplace. And pandemic added one more is these workers are socially protected, because we have seen the precarious side of the business during pandemic, that, you know, when we needed them to hold our workers back, they just left us alone, as Aisha said, and so do the manufacturers. No one taken responsibility for these workers. Like, workers alone in Bangladesh, like, over 300,000 who lost their job and they went to the ground zero and was starving with their children because there was a zero economic security for them. So we really don't want that to let go. So this is like two big things.
Two big things.
I want you to have. So consumers education is really important. So do the workers education.
Yeah. So I would say, just to add to Kalpana, because so much of what we do at Remake is really remaking these connections, right, between us as citizens and consumers and garment maker and union communities, is, you know, first, as Kalpana said, complete divestment is not an option. We all wear clothes, whether you consider yourself a fashionable person or not. And so on our website, remake.world, we have a brand directory where you can look up some of the better brands, some of the worst brands, some of your beloved brands. And what we do is make it very easy for you to also write to their executives with the one click of a button in terms of the things Kalpana is talking about. Are you paying your workers a living wage? Are you thinking about just transitions? Because I assure you, there are people within companies monitoring and signals of what their customers are saying. And because right now we're living in so much greenwashing noise, we're trying to cut past all that nonsense to really ask the questions that matter. Pay people? And is your climate footprint going up or down? So that's one way to be involved. The second is, as Kalpana said, you know, a lot of the beauty of organizing is finding joy in this work. You know, Kalpana runs a women-led organization. Workers have a safe space to come. Our ambassadors are in the room here. And if you're interested in this movement, what we are trying to build is really a solidarity movement here, you know, of coming together, of swapping, of mending, of learning about these issues in a joyful way so that we can campaign and we can win. Kalpana mentioned something very important about binding agreements. Right before this talk, we were outside Levi's headquarters. Levi's, as you all know, is a very iconic brand for us here in San Francisco, espouses a lot of values around sustainability. And yet, for over a year, we've been asking them to sign a binding agreement which would hold and keep their workers safe in Bangladesh and Pakistan. Four of their workers in a denim mill died earlier this year, and yet they don't. And so Billy is standing up there. He was our chant leader. We're out there. He went back down. There he is. You know, and some of this is the power of protest. So if you want to buy better, if you want to add your voice to protesting, there are ways to get involved. And the final thing I'll share with you all is regulation. So around the room, you have a postcard. It's called the Fabric Act. It's the first of its kind federal bill that was introduced by Senator Gillibrand earlier this year. Right now, this bill is only looking at U.S. garment workers. Yes, believe it or not, there are still 100,000 U.S. garment workers. But for us, the solidarity is really important, that if we pass this bill, we're setting a precedent globally. And what this bill says is that not only are brands responsible for wage theft or any holds in a worker's take-home salary, but they're legally accountable to make them whole. Turns out we passed this bill in California, the Garment Worker Protection Act, earlier this year. And what this bill will do is put to rest, finally, a very important question. For years, companies have been saying these workers are outsourced. They're not our workers. It's not our problem. Should this bill pass, we're setting up to really close that gap to say, actually, you as corporations, if you're actively sourcing from a factory, are jointly liable for those wages, because it's the prices you pay that result in these conditions. If you are a fashion business, you can endorse the bill. If you're a customer, there's a QR code and you can just add your name, and we have growing, believe it or not, partisan interest in this bill, bipartisan interest. So perhaps we can get some Republicans across the aisle to sign on to this as well. So lots of ideas for solutions. But again, we wanted to open it up now for questions. And if you don't mind, being a question rather than just waxing on, that would be lovely. But if you could take a second to tell us who you are, we'd like to know who we're having the conversation with.
Hi, my name is Garrett Brown. I work with garment workers here, and also I've had the pleasure of working with Kalpona in Bangladesh. Everybody here, I think, has had the experience of living through COVID. I wondered perhaps if you could explain what COVID meant for garment workers in Bangladesh, for their families themselves, and what role the brands that we all know played in that.
Yeah, thank you so much, Garrett, you know, for this question. So, you know, very beginning of the industry, you know, the pandemic, I know it was practical for everyone, you know, but it was a dire situation when we talk about production country workers, because our workers are so hand to mouth. So very beginning, as you know, that the brand started postponing or canceling or denying to pay their bills. What, you know, Aisha already explained. And then second, you know, the manufacturers came with like, oh, we don't have money, we cannot pay you. But many of them, you know, can pay for a year from their own pocket, but they didn't. So then they brought the government, you know, to the scene, and government has a stimulation package. But it is unluckily that our workers, those who are supposed to receive that money, especially the workers, those are working in the in a subcontract factory, they couldn't get access to that fund. So as I said, that in a 3 months or, you know, 4 months, you know, duration, there's over 300,000 workers, mostly women, like 60% of them are women who lost the job from the industry. So first, it was in general. Second, workers has been handpicked who are pregnant, so the, you know, factory can get rid of giving them maternity leave with benefits. And then third layer workers was who try to organize in the factory. They have been handpicked and fired. So these were the, you know, this was the situation. And workers was, like many workers I across to, one, like I can share the story that after even 10 months, when I was visiting the industrial belt, I saw that, you know, hundreds of women workers are, men and women, of course, waiting in the factory gate to get hired. And I across many women workers, one particular, she was crying and walking. I stopped her and asked that, what happened to you, sister? And she said, you know, I lost job 10 months ago. I did not get hired in the industry again. And my husband was the earner in the family, who was a construction worker. And he lost his job 7 days ago. And we have 6 years and 3 years at home. And today I left my children unwanted, you know, there is no one to take care of them. So unattended, I should say, and without a food, because I don't have any money so I can give them. So the vulnerability was in that level, because this worker making only, it used to $95, it's $78 now because of inflation a month. And it's not enough for one person full month cost, which is, you know, a minimum wage. Definitely it is not adequate. And the skilled workers minimum wage, a little bucks, a few bucks more, but still it is not enough for one person full month cost, let alone if she had children. So she never ever get chance to, you know, do a savings. And country doesn't have social security for citizens. And country doesn't have a unemployment insurance. So women literally was starving with their, you know, children at home. And that also, you know, reminds me that what I'm doing now. So I'm, you know, running the campaign from the Global South Union. So this, you know, country from Bangladesh, India, Sri Lanka, Cambodia, Indonesia, Philippines, and everywhere, the workers lost their job. It's like $500 million the, you know, that the brand and retailers has been steal from them. So now we are running a campaign called Pay Your Workers, and I represent the union committee, the negotiating committee. I'm leading the campaign. And Billy is amazing.
Tell them about Adidas,
yes.
It's
Yeah. So, you know, one of the part of my trip in the West Coast, it is I'm giving a little tough time with Billy to the Adidas, because Adidas, it really owe a millions of dollars to the workers, especially in Indonesia, India, and also in Cambodia. Cambodia alone is $11 million. So we did bigger protest in Adidas headquarter in Portland. We really give them a hard time. But today...
We got cops, didn't we?
Yeah, when we went to the market and, you know, just to deliver a letter to the, you know, Adidas head, one of the store, we were nice people. Aisha was with us, trust us. We were nice. But they had a cop, they had security, and they had a 8 cop in front of the store and just looking at us. They're like ready to get arrested us. So, I mean, that reminds me that what I face when I try to organize in back home, that reminds me what the workers facing when they try to organize and join with union. They're being threatened, beaten, falsely charged, and also forced to leave the community. It is same. We just went to, you
know. Kalpana was saying, you know, this is just like Bangladesh.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that, you know, it's such an important question, Garrett. As Kalpana noted, one of the things that every industry member did. This was luxury, high street, big box brands, so Macy's, Walmart, Levi's, Gap. They all unilaterally canceled orders in March 2020. The whole world shut down. We were all on our Zoom screens. Turns out some people were buying eventually tops, but not bottoms, because, you know, we were not needing them. And because the industry contracts are set up in such an asymmetry of power, as Kalpana noticed, first, the most vulnerable workers were fired. Short-term contracts, pregnant women out the door. Workers were being hired and fired because the industry couldn't keep up with what demand would look like. But, you know, one of the silver linings in this that Shamini had pointed to at the start of this conversation was that our community, this Remake community, in solidarity with garment workers, with Worker Rights Consortium, we mobilized at the start of the pandemic in a hard way. We had data. We knew which brands had canceled orders. We made their life miserable. Any Instagram, any TikTok, anywhere where they were posting, here's a flash sale. It was just like, pay up, pay up, pay up. If you won't pay up, we won't buy from you. All said and done, 25 brands reversed the decision. And that was no small amount, because just in that one moment in time, March 2020, the math was $40 billion of canceled contracts. And getting those 25 brands to change course because of that reputational damage meant $22 billion back to factories. And it's all that to say that is amazing, but the fight is not over. Because year three in the pandemic, we're still sitting on pages and pages of wage theft cases. And part of what we have is things like, okay, it's the FIFA Cup, let's go after Adidas. You know, we got $9 million out of Victoria's Secret because we ran a very cheeky campaign called Victoria's Dirty Secret. And they did not like that. But so much of what we're trying to do is now establish the right regulatory framework so that never again, because this will not sadly be our last pandemic, our last climate shock, that all the economic pain of this highly profitable industry is borne by women who have to leave their children unchaperoned to try and put food on the table.
Okay, so we're coming up to almost the hour. I have one last question before we wrap up. For those of you who have seen their website, Remake actually has 1,500 ambassadors today in 75 countries. A lot of them are the next generation leaders. I do believe, Aisha, that's not enough ambassadors. And Kalpana, I'm sure they are in touch with a lot of workers. What do you want to tell the people out there in terms of getting involved and becoming ambassadors? What does it mean? And how do you want to galvanize more people for this amazing cause?
I wanted to start first, Kalpana, with maybe you answer the question in terms of just how hard and dangerous this union work is in Bangladesh, and yet you go forth, and what you need as from, you know, BCWS's perspective, and then I'll share more of what we are doing with youth and citizen mobilization this side of the pond.
Yeah, thank you. So how hard is... I got fired and blacklisted when I organized in my shop floor. I became union president in 15 and a half. So later I got, as I said, that, you know, blacklisted throughout the industry, but I consider this a stupid idea, stupid decision made by the factory owner. They shouldn't have fired me, okay? Because they made me global voice anyway, thanks to them. So it is, it still happens. So it is so difficult because our business is so colluded with the politics. 40% of our factory owners, they sit in the parliament, and the rest of them are their friends. So our, when your legislator is your factory owner, you have like very narrow avenue to achieve anything. But you know, I'm lucky one that the Bangladeshi workers, these young workers are so brave. They have been defeated 2 times, 3 times, but they again step up and come back, and they're organizing because we believe in organizing. If we wanted to way out, organizing is the way out that we can, fill. So despite all odds, like I was in prison for raising voice with my coworkers, our registration revoked, our bank frozen, one of my coworkers disappeared and beaten to death. We lost workers in Tajrin Fashion, Rana Plaza, but we haven't stopped. We were there to make changes, and we'll keep doing this. But you know, to run this program, it needs resources. So resources is needed, but solidarity too. So these two things we really expect from you guys. The best way, you know, support our campaigns that we run in here, show you solidarity. And if you have scope to, you know, share your resources to educate our workers in back home and, you know, letting them educate in joining union, I think that would be super helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Kalpona. And I think I couldn't have said it more beautifully. What does this movement need? Resources and solidarity. One of the things we really aim, sitting here in our North American privilege, is to try and make those pathways easier. You know, as I said, H&M gave that bullshit $250,000 check. No other company showed up when Pakistan was under one of the biggest climate shocks that we've seen. Our community, this community, people like Amy and Sophia mobilized, donating their birthdays and raising money. And we raised, in a crowdsourced, grassroots-funded way, $150,000 to go back to garment workers for blankets, for food, for money. So at a very basic way, it's to say, how do we make these communities whole? But that's really at the bottom here, right? And then the second is about building joyful, loving community to constantly be in solidarity. It's to say, all the work that Kalpona is doing, we need a pipeline of people behind Kalpona to take on this work in places where it's getting harder and harder. You know, we used to do a lot of work in Hong Kong. It is impossible to work in Hong Kong anymore. You know, in Myanmar, once the junta took over, we had garment workers holding up their solidarity sign to say, don't forget about us. We're still producing in militarized factories in Myanmar. And so it's to say, we need access to media. We need to break these stories in a humanized way. We need to win these campaigns. And at the end of the day, what we need is regulatory reform. And so our ambassadors can share with you, but again, it comes to resources for recruiting people, for retaining them, to making sure that they feel like they are really connected to this work. So I would say those are the big things, Shamini, is how do we clone Kalpona into thousands of women in all garment producing nations? And then how do we build more Sophia and Amy's on this side?
Well, thank you for that. For those of you who don't know, and this is where I say, you know, hands off on Remake World, they do not take any corporate sponsorship. They do not take any dollars from brands. So everything and anything that you are able to help, New York Times article recently just told us that $3 a day is what most of these garment workers make, so that we can say yay at the World Cup jersey, and you know that's what they're actually being paid. And you know, Adidas literally paid $800 million for sponsorship. So the work that is actually being done is in the background, so that we get the joy of seeing the jerseys made. Think about this, and so. Please visit the website, Remake. Also, talk to people about these issues. These issues are not going away because the last time we checked, everybody wears clothes. And so if we are going to reduce consumption, like Aisha and Kalpana said, let's give living wages so that they too can really be away from the poverty. Kalpana recently just told us that the 4 million garment workers in Bangladesh are all in poverty situation. Not one of them is not. So on that note, I can still remain joyful because I have people like Kalpana and Aisha who are doing the work. And finally, you know, we are fundamentally all human beings. So what is it that we value? The joy, you know, the human dignity, and also the ability to live a very, very good life by sheer doing what we want to do. And these garment workers are doing what they need to do. Let them have a joyful life. So thank you again, Aisha, and also
please Kalpana. Join me in thanking with a big round of raucous applause, okay, for our host Shamini, but also Kalpana, who's been a whirlwind tour. How badass is she? Yes.
Thank you, Shaq 15, for hosting this and opening up the doors. The work continues, the journey continues, and the conversation will sure to continue. Have a good night, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for our next Conversations podcast coming soon. If you have a story that needs to be shared, we'd love to hear from you. For more information on Shaq 15 and our community, you can email info@shaq15.com, connect with us on Instagram, or visit our website at shaq15.com.